Oh, that's right. We are here at the library today. That's right. And we are going to be having a very special book discussion here. We have Mia Fuller, who is a 10th grader at Greenwood High. We have Tracy Utz, who, what part of the library do you work in, Tracy?
Teen Services, Young Adult Services.
Teen Services. That's an interesting age group to be working with now, isn't it, Tracy?
It is. We cover grades 6 through 12. And I love it.
And you love it. Well, you've done a lot since you've moved here to the new library.
Yes.
And you have your own teen center.
And we are thrilled with it. It's nice to have to not only have their books in their own section, but also just to have a center where they can come and hang out and do whatever it is they want to do.
Exactly. And you have a lot of programs always going on.
We do. And right now, of course, with Greenwood Reads, we've had several programs specifically geared toward Susan Bartoletti's book.
And that book is?
The Boy Who Dared.
The Boy Who Dared. And I thought that was an interesting choice. I've had Prudence on the show. I thought that was an interesting choice this year. What did you think of the choice?
I loved it because I loved the period of history, and I learned a great deal. And I will admit, prior to this, I knew very little about that period of history and the Nazi regime and everything that happened during the Holocaust. So I learned a great deal. So I found it very interesting. Very sad, as Mia has said, but it's something that everyone needs to know about.
Mia, you've had friends, I'm sure, that have read the book. How have they seen the book?
One of my friends, she said she had to stop reading the book in the middle of it because she got upset after his mother. He felt that his mother had turned on him because of her fiance, Hugo. She was starting to take his side on about the Hitler Youth and how the way he was his part during the book.
So but other people have read it. Have they enjoyed the book?
Yes, ma'am, because that's their favorite subject when we talk about world history, the Holocaust, and Adolf Hitler, mm-hmm. and the Hitler Youth.
I found the book totally depressing. I'll just be perfectly frank. I know one of the things that Prudence talked about, of course, was the fact of gangs and hate and this type of thing. And I know y'all are going to start talking about that in just a second. But we're going to have a book discussion here about The Boy Who Dared. Tracy is actually going to be leading this, and Mia's here with us today. So we are going to talk about this. So I guess without further ado, let's start talking about The Boy Who Dared by Susan Campbell Bertolelli.
First of all, Mia, just give me your general impression of the book.
My general impression, it was depressing because you have to understand that was a boy that was around my age when he was murdered or executed during the Holocaust. And, it was kind of eye-opening because, I only thought that during the Depression that older people or adults got executed. But then you also had to realize that as you read some of the books during the Holocaust, like on The Boy Who Dared and The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, other children were killed also.
Yes, they were. What did you think about the way he died?
I thought it was wrong because I understood that he did take all the partial credit for it, but his other friends should have, had a sentencing too, not a death sentence also. But they only got time in jail.
Did you feel he was courageous?
He was very courageous.
Do you think you could have done what he did?
Some yes and some no. I'm not saying I'm scared to die, but that's kind of early to die.
It's kind of early to die. How old was he?
He was 17.
17.
And how old are you now?
I'm 15 now. I'll be 16 on Valentine's Day.
That's right, a Valentine's baby. As the book begins, where is Helmut at that time, or Helmut?
Helmut, he was at the beginning of the book, he was in elementary school, but at the end of the book, he had graduated from the school, and he was just trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his life, and he wanted to be a journalist, so that's where the end of the book ended at, where he was praying at the print shop and he got caught.
Do you remember what day the book started on?
Day 264.
And what was the significance of that day?
That was the day that the executioner came. Mm-hmm. It was Tuesday.
That's right. It was on a Tuesday. That's why it was so important. And what was so important about the executioner coming?
Well, you could hear the chains, and then you could hear the keys in the metal hitting the other side of the metal. And the executioner would come to your cell door and he would tell you, come on, it's time to go. And that meant that you were going to get executed.
Do you think he knew that this was the day?
No, he probably didn't, but you know, he could. You have a self inside voice and it tells you, help me, you're going to die.
Can you imagine waiting 264 days, you know, week after week, to see whether or not you were going to die? I mean, he had already been, you know, given his sentence. He knew it was a death sentence. And you talked briefly a little while ago about the fact that he took all of the blame. Do you remember why he took all of the blame?
Because he said that he was the person that printed all of the things, and that his friends, they were scared, but then they were in some of the Hitler Youth, and that, you know, he just didn't want to see his friends be the same way that he was going to be.
Let's talk a little bit about the Hitler Youth, because the reason we have this book, The Boy Who Dared, is because of another book that Susan Bartoletti wrote about the Hitler Youth. It was a nonfiction title, and in her research of that book, she came across the story of Helmut and his case. When you were reading about the Hitler Youth in the book, what did you think about all that they were involved in?
I didn't like it because, you know, you had the, if some of your friends weren't with the Hitler Youth, then you had to turn on them, just like in the movie that me and Miss Tracy showed us in The Swing Kids. Aardvark, he was into the music and the Jewish, and that wasn't German music, and so he didn't like it, and that was how I thought of the Hitler Youth too, because, you know, they would beat up their own friends, and then they would have to listen to rules that they didn't want to do. But, you know, as being a German in your generations, that was what you were taught to do.
Were there parts of the Hitler Youth that Helmut liked?
He did, because he liked going on the trips and doing like the different activities that they had planned.
Now, have you ever personally been involved in any type of organization where you did things like they did? As far as taking trips and going with your friends and...
You know what? We're going to have to hold on to that for the next segment here, folks. I tell you what, if you've got some great stories to tell, I'm all ears. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Mia Fuller and Tracy Utz right here at the Greenwood Library. I certainly hope you'll stay with us. We are going to hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
And we're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It's Meet Me at the Diner. It's a very special Meet Me at the Diner. We are talking to Mia Fuller, who is a 10th grader at Greenwood High, Tracy Utz, head of the teen department right here at the library, and we're talking about The Boy Who Dared. So, Tracy, let's take it away and see what else we can find out here today.
Okay, because we were talking about the Hitler Youth and some of the things that they were doing in that organization. Some of the things that appealed to the teens at that time, of course, were the uniforms, were the outdoor activities such as camping. And can you think of anything that you've been a part of that was similar in that those areas?
Girl Scouts. Yeah. I remember when I used to sell the Girl Scout cookies, and I used to get on everybody's nerves about buying some cookies. And then I used to help. Well, what I do now is Junior Citizens is where we go out, and we help the homeless, and we do Project Love at Northside Baptist Church. And then I do Interact Club. That's with the Rotary Club that we help out the veterans at Post 224, I think it is, by YMCA. And then I do the Psych Club, where we also talk about psychology, and then we figure out the human brain. So that's some of the things.
Now, in the book, Helmut also used the Hitler Youth and what he knew about the Hitler Youth. How did he do that? I mean, what kind of approach did he take when he decided that he was going to, I guess, try to get back a little bit, try to make people aware of what the Hitler Youth were all about? What some of the things that they were doing?
Well, he was in the Hitler Youth for a little while, and then when he finally graduated, he went to a print shop and he printed out pamphlets and telling them how the people, the German people, needed to listen, that this wasn't right, that the Hitler Youth was doing, and they were having other men telling them how to, you know, grow up to basically kill people, and, you know, if they're not one race or one religion or anything like that, and they didn't have the basic looks to be a German, then it just wasn't right.
And we're going to back up a little bit because we've talked about this in some of our one-on-one book discussions about this book, where you have mentioned the looks before in some of the charts that you've seen in the history books and everything. Tell us a little bit about those charts, what you're talking about.
Well, Miss Tracy was saying, she told me that in Helmut, I had read that Helmut had to prove as one of the requirements as the Hitler Youth that she had to have, identification that you're a Jew, I mean a German, as far as six generations back. And some of the charts would also include like how a Jew nose would look and how a German nose would look and the blonde hair. And then Miss Tracy, she told me a story about her brother, that her brother, he had blonde hair and blue eyes. Mm-hmm. And that they would kill Miss Tracy instead of her because she didn't come out looking like that. She had brown eyes. And it would just tell you that the neck and their hair color and the eye color, and that they had a different skin tone, than that they weren't really a Jew, they were a German, or vice versa.
Well, you know, early on in the book, and remember, we're seeing a lot of this through flashbacks, he is remembering some of the first things that took him aside was when he was going to the store and he was told he couldn't go to certain stores. Do you remember why he couldn't go to the certain stores?
Well, the store that he wanted to go to, he wanted to get some apple trimmings. And his mother had gave him some money. And he went there. And then one of the Gestapo had told him that he couldn't go there. And he had the word verboten on it. And that meant that that person was a Jew and that a German couldn't go over there and purchase any of his things.
It was forbidden. You also mentioned some of the information that he was putting in the pamphlets that he was trying to get out to his fellow people. Where was he getting that information from? Do you remember?
Was he getting it from the hip people?
He was getting it from the radio. Remember the radio?
Oh, yeah, that the radio that his brother had. It was. They also had a radio law, and he listened to the BBG. That was the London. That was the London radio station, and it was a radio law that you couldn't listen to anything but German. But the London, the BBG, they were talking German to get the message across so that some people wouldn't get caught, but he kept listening to it every night, and he brought his friends over so they could listen and they could be a witness about what that they were saying, because Helmuth was saying that the London people, they told the truth, and the Germans, they were holding back the truth so people wouldn't know what was going on in society.
How did he know, or why did he feel that it was the truth? What type of information were they given over the BBC?
Because they were saying, one, about they had to get the coats, the different coats and stuff like that. And then he said one of his brother's friends had went over there, and they were telling him the experience about how it was so cold and how they didn't have any supplies and things. And then the London people finally told them this is what they're doing with their coats and not giving them to the soldiers.
And they were also giving the death counts on both sides, where when they were listening to the German radio station, they were just hearing all the good things about all the wonderful defeats and how everything was so rosy. But when he listened to the British Broadcasting Company, he was hearing, you know, the death numbers on both sides. It just wasn't one side of the story. It was both sides of the story. And that's when he started realizing that there was a little bit more going on. But who gave him the idea of the pamphlets? Do you remember?
Can you hear?
His friends. Okay. They were talking to him about, you know, some of his skills were writing. That was something that he was interested in. And remember the books? He was always wanting to read the books, and he didn't understand why he had to give up reading his Westerns.
And then when he was younger, he decided to steal his brother's books because they thought of the Gestapo came in his house, that they would take his brothers away because he was reading American books.
And his friends were just teasing him about how he should just, you know, write all this up and everything. And it gave him some ideas about how to approach getting information out to his fellow people. And he did that by old typewriter that he had there at his grandparents' house. He did it at night once his, you know, grandparents were in the bed. And how did he get the information out once he printed it, though?
When his friends came over at night, Rudy and his other friend, they would put them in their coat pockets, and then they would leave them in, like, telephone booths and in the apartment stairways, and then they would wake up the next morning and finally get them.
Now, I've got a friend who has read this book who always tells me at this point that he started getting a little bit cocky, started taking a little bit more risk at trying to get that information out. Do you remember some of the risks that he took?
One risk that he took at the towards the end of the book, that he asked the Frenchman that worked at his job to print it in French and hand it out to the French people. That was one of the risks that he took, because that was his job, and he was going to eventually get caught.
Mm-hmm. And what did the Frenchman tell him?
He told him no, because that was something that he didn't want to provide.
Yeah, he just wasn't interested in it. Wasn't a risk that he was willing to take, but that was what was over, was observed, and that was why he was turned in. Do you remember who turned him in?
His boss.
What did you think about his boss turning him in?
I think that was kind of...
Do you think he thought he was being a good German?
No, it wasn't. But that's what he thought he was doing.
Mm-hmm. Why was he not being a good German?
Because, you know, is you can understand that a person is trying to stand up for their rights, but I guess he didn't think that.
And we've talked about this, you know, we would like to have been as courageous as he was. We'd like to think that we would stand up for what was right, but a lot of times we, you know, protect ourselves, we protect our family, our friends, and we bury our head and we go along to get along to try to keep safe. But he wasn't doing that. He was willing to risk everything. Did he think it was a risk?
He did.
What did he think would be the most that would happen to him if he was caught?
He would just get served jail time. That was pretty much it.
You know, he and his friends actually talked about this. You know, if we get caught,
somebody would take all the blame.
And we're juveniles.
Mm-hmm. And they thought they would get tried as a juvenile. Mm-hmm.
But that they wouldn't really do anything except slap them on the wrist.
It's not anything like today, is it?
Exactly.
Is it like today? Yeah, same type of thing, right?
Yeah, you know, and they think they're going to be tried as a juvenile. Exactly. And sometimes, and most times they are, but every once in a while a case comes along and they don't. And, you know, when you talked about this earlier and the fact that he took the blame, do you think he should have taken the blame?
Some of me says he should and some of me says he didn't.
What do you think his friends should have done?
His friends should have said, look, Judge or Mr. or the head of Gestapo, I took part of it, you know, I would take part of the crime. But see, if they did, I think all three of them would have gotten a death sentence.
Exactly. And he realized that, Helmut realized that all three of them would have died. And he was willing to just take that himself and take it. And he also knew that he more or less instigated all of this, that he planned it, he got his friends involved. Yes, he knew how they felt about the Nazi regime, but he was willing to take all that blame. And, you know, when you think of a young man his age who is willing to do that, you know, that's somebody who's pretty brave and courageous, that they're willing to stand up not only for what they believe in, but they're willing to give their life for their friends. When did he realize that he was, that it was a life sentence, that he was being tried as an adult?
When he went to the interrogation room, and he went in front of the four Gestapo men, and they finally told him, and they read it out. Then he looked around, he realized that none of his family was there, that just his friend's family was there, and that he was the only one that was handcuffed, and the rest of them were not handcuffed.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about this too, in the fact that his family was not there. His mother did receive a notice that he had been executed at the end of the book. And we talked about this and what she received. Do you remember how you reacted when you found out what they sent his mother?
I tell you what, you'll have to stay tuned to hear the next section right here. We are right here at the Greenwood Library in the beautiful Veterans Room right here, the conference room. We are going to hear South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors, so don't you go away.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
And we're back here, except today we're not at Sharp Facets. We actually are at the Greenwood County Library. We are here with Tracy Utz and Mia Fuller. She is in the 10th grade of Greenwood High. We are talking about the boy who dared and some of the relationships to then and as well as some of the relationships as it bodes for today. Part of the reason Prudence thought that this would be a good book to read was what, Tracy?
Tolerance. We hear about a lot of intolerance, whether it is, you know, racial bigotry, whether it's, you know, somebody's overweight, whether somebody's not dressed correctly. We hear about bullying in the schools, and we just thought this would be a good timely book for us to do.
And this is being read by
all the middle schoolers, but also, you know, just like Mia, a lot of the high schoolers as well. But we did provide it for all the middle schools here in Greenwood County.
How has it been going as far as the whole program?
It's gone very well. I have been surprised by some of the issues in the books that have really played a part of some of the teens' thinking. When I read a book, or when I read the book, I'm more or less, you know, concentrated on, you know, what the young man went through, the fact that he was executed, the fact that he stood up to the Nazis. But a lot of them, just like Mia addressed earlier, they get hung up on the relationships that are actually in the book. The relationship between Helm and his mother, the relationship between the Hugo, the boyfriend, the fact that he, you know, became the stepfather and how he treated Elma, you know, his relationship with the grandparents. They really concentrate on those relationships as much as anything. And that was kind of surprising to me.
What do you think about from a historical, because it is a historical novel, what did you think about that? How did you think it was written?
I enjoyed it simply because that was not a period of history that I was very familiar with. I had not studied the Holocaust or the Nazi regime that much. So reading about the book, you know, seeing how she described the stores of that time, the way they dressed, you know, what they ate, I think it put you back in that period of history. I think she did a very good job of that.
Okay. All right. Well, we were talking about the invoice. We had a little conversation off air here with Mia about, you know, it costs to be in prison, doesn't it?
Who pays for that?
Yeah, and somebody's got to pay for it. So let's get back to it. Mia and Tracy and Ann L are right here with you today. So take it away, Tracy.
Okay, and at the end of the book, we do find out that after Helmut is executed, his mother is sent an invoice for the time that he was in prison. And, you know, we were shocked by that. The fact that, you know, she was charged for every day that he was in prison, the bread that he ate, you know, even down to the executioner's time who was brought into executing. And that would just kind of shocked us that they would send that to his mother the day after he was executed. But it led to a discussion of who pays for people to be in prison now. Who pays for people to be in prison, Mia?
That's a good question. I think, in me personally, I would say the people's family and then Greenwood County, because taxpayers.
Yeah. Somebody has to pay for that room and board and that food, and, you know, also the care that they get, because they do get medical care. And we hear about stories where people on death row, and they're on death row for years and years now, where he was only on death row for 264 days. So there is quite a difference now. But let's talk a little bit about the Gestapo, the Nazi police. What did you think about how they treated people?
Well, at the beginning, I didn't like it. because, you know, they would always, just because when Hellman and his other friend Ruby, they had this little detective service going on, and the Gestapo, you know, they stopped them and asked them, what is this, what are you doing, is this enemy propaganda? And, you know, they took their names, and then, you know, they told them it was a warning this time. And then at that time, Elmont and Ruth, they were just trying to, you know, solve unsolved mysteries that needed to be solved and that needed the help to be solved. And, you know, toward the end, you know, they still were evil, but, you know, when they were on the train, you know, they let them talk. They kind of treat them like they were regular people, but still not because... But I just thought they were doing it because they knew what was ahead of him and his friends.
Could you relate them at all to what we think of in our society as police today?
On some cases I can, because, you know, all cops are not good cops. And, you know, you can say, because some people, a lot of people call Greenwood police dirty, but, you know, that's just a personal opinion. And for my personal opinion, they're here to protect them and serve Greenwood County.
Yes. And it's something that we're taught to go to the police and safety, to dial 911 when we're in trouble. And, of course, during Helmut's time, it wasn't quite like that. You know, they weren't taught to, they more or less feared the Gestapo and, you know, anyone that was associated with it. But when he is arrested, it's just Helmut that is arrested, and he is questioned. And he eventually gives them the name of his friends and associates that helped him. Do you remember why?
Because they said, well, at the beginning of the book, one of his Jewish friends had went there, Mr. Warbs, and when he came back, he was looking healthy, but when he came back, he said his hands were so crippled that he was beaten so bad and that he looked way more older, because Helmut, he was tortured so bad, and he told Helmut that you'll be tortured so bad and beat so bad that you would have to give him an answer just to stop the pain.
You wouldn't be able to stop. What did they do? And I think his name was, I probably pronounced Warbs, but I think it was W-O-R-B-S. What did they do to him to make his hands like that?
They put him, and they took all his clothes off, and they put him in cold water, and then they let him stay outside in the cold with no clothes on, and then they broke his hands.
His hands froze with the ice over them, and they took clubs, and they broke his hands. That was one of the more visual things in the story that really got to me. Were there other instances in the story that were very memorable to you that you couldn't get out of your mind?
Another thing that really got to me was Hugo, the fiancé or the boyfriend. He was part of the Nazis, and it was just, he would go out and torture all those Jewish people, and then he'd come home and act like nothing did never happen. And, you know, and I also felt sorry for him and his brothers, because his mother at the time, she was starting to feel like, oh, well, this is his job, you know, this is what he does, and she was starting not to care about what our boys were thinking at that point in time.
Now, you mentioned what he did, and he also more or less pushed Helmut to become part of the Hitler Youth, mm-hmm. and everything, and he kept after him to join the Hitler Youth. Do you think that Helmut would have gone on to write the, or to print the pieces of propaganda and to try to get, you know, the word out about what was really going on if he had never joined the Hitler Youth?
I think he would, because, you know, he, as time progressed, he would see what was going on. But, you know, on another side, I wouldn't think he would, because if he didn't get into the Hitler Youth and he wouldn't understand the meaning, then, you know, he wouldn't know what they were really doing.
And he didn't really have a lot of choice either.
Yeah, because you're required to be in the Hitler Youth.
And he had seen a lot of the bullying that the Hitler Youth had done. You know, he saw it in the schools. He had seen it with some of his friends in school, or some of the young men that he considered friends who happened to be Jewish. He saw how they were picked on and beaten and treated and everything. Have you ever come upon a scene like that in your own school where you've seen somebody that's been picked on or bullied?
Actually, I seen it today when I was in school. A person, you know, I guess they didn't have on the right shoes, because, you know, we're so interested today in name brands as kids growing up. And the girl, you know, she didn't have on the right shoes, you know, everybody thought she had on Air Forces, but, you know, they were so, I wouldn't say they were not in shape to wear, but, you know, that's probably what her family could afford. And she was really being picked on, and you know me, I wanted to say something, but then I just thought, no, that's not my place to say anything.
Have you ever been picked on like that about something you wore?
Not to my face, but probably behind my back. I have.
and we talked about this earlier too. Are you a name brand girl?
I am.
You love your name brand.
All right. I tell you what, we're going to have to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment, so don't you go away.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
All right, and we are back here at the Greenwood Library. We pre-recorded this show for you. We've been talking about The Boy Who Dared. In fact, Susan Bartolelli will be here in Greenwood the end of the month, I do believe.
Yes, on Sunday the 26th,
I believe. It's the 26th, yeah.
That's when she'll be here at the auditorium.
That's going to be nice to be able to have the actual writer of the book, the author of the book, here. So many times they've already died. To have a real live author here that on a book that's been the Greenwood Reads, that would be pretty exciting.
Yes, yes. We're looking forward to her because she is someone that we can actually ask about where she got some of her ideas from and how she actually came upon the story of Helmet in her earlier research. So we're looking forward to having her here.
Sure. You know, before we went on to hear a word from our sponsors, you were kind of touching on the fact of bullying, tolerance, intolerance, gangs, this type of thing. And it is something I think in today's world, it's hard to believe that we're actually dealing with this. Just when we think that we're so advanced in the world, we seem to be kind of going backwards in some aspects. Don't you think, Tracy?
And I think, too, that it shocks me because we are on, you know, a downtrodden economic time when people can't afford all the fancy brand names and that you're having to make do with what you have or with no name brand. Well, I don't guess you'd be no name brand, can you? with items that do not have a brand. And it surprises me that people are still being bullied or picked on because their footwear is not of a certain brand or they're, you know, they dress differently or they look differently. So, yes, that still surprises me.
Or the expensive jeans, right? Or the ones that look like they're tore apart and they're the most expensive ones. That still gets me, folks.
But now, we were talking about this in schools and the incident that you witnessed just today at school. Is this something that happens frequently or just...
Well, you know, it does happen pretty good. As a matter of fact, it happens every day. And, you know, that's just, I'm not going to say that's what they're used to, but, you know, as some kids, they feel bad about themselves, so they pick on other people just to make them feel better about themselves and to build their self-esteem and self-confidence up. And they actually, the people that are picking on the other children, they actually need to realize that that's lowering the child's self-esteem is getting picked on and lowering his self-confidence, and that's not something that you should want to do.
Were these incidents ever witnessed by teachers? How did the teachers react to this type of incident?
Well, some teachers, they take note of it. You know, some teachers, they'll witness a bullying and then, you know, they'll not say nothing, but then, you know, they'll make a record of it, and then as it keeps going and going, and then they'll finally be turned into the guidance office, and then that's when authorities, police, federal authorities come in and investigate, and then they'll take it from there and make a decision.
Do you feel safe when you go to school?
Yes, I do.
Do you enjoy school?
Yes, I do.
What are some of your favorite classes?
Lunch. U.S. history, and I love math.
Did this book interest you because it was part of history?
Yes, ma'am, it did, and I always like reading about the Holocaust because it's actually sad. When I went to Washington, D.C. this summer, I went to the Holocaust Museum. And I walked in the children's part, and then I walked through this aisle, and it stunk so bad, and I didn't know what the smell was, but it was after you seen the shoes of the Jewish people that were put into the boxes and were being furnished and being executed like that, and then they would leave their shoes, and they put them out there for you to look at and display.
Were you surprised by the number of shoes?
I really was, because I seen all sizes. I seen older women, more children, and when you went inside, they give you a card, and then at the end of the museum tour, you'll find out if your person died or they lived.
So you kind of get to research that person mm-hmm. as you go around the museum. Now, you said that earlier that as you studied this in history, that this part of history, studying the Holocaust, was, you know, very interesting to you and a lot of other students. Why? What is it about the Holocaust that...
Because Germany, they were a very upholding country, but then when Adolf Hitler came in as chancellor, everything, you know, he, to me, it was kind of like he was a joke. Because first off, he said he wanted everything good for the fatherland, and then, you know, he wasn't really worried about war, but then as soon as everything started falling downhill, he started blaming everything on the Jewish people. And that was just kind of weird to me, because, you know, you're coming in saying one thing, and then you're coming back doing another thing. And then that's just something that I don't think I would have, even though he wasn't voted, you know, he was just put in that position, I would have not accepted it at all.
Because we do have our elections today. We do put mm-hmm. our politicians in place, and yes, we frequently see where they say one thing, and then when they get in the office, they either don't do it or they're incapable of doing it. Is there something particular that you remember reading that Hitler did that, you know, stayed with you?
Well, one thing that Hitler did, it was, we learned about it in world geography last year in ninth grade. And my teacher, Coach Kevin Addis, he was telling us about Adolf Hitler and how, as he didn't want to take responsibility as he was doing all this, he was putting it on his Nazis. And his effect when he does the little greeting sign with the hand motion is also being used today. And some kids at our school have gotten suspended for doing that hand sign. And that's a big defect on some people's life.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with the swastika. that symbol, you know, of course, you know, we learned back from, you know, prehistoric times or pre-Holocaust, it was a sign of life and a symbol of good. And yet now when we see that symbol, we think of it as a symbol of hatred mm-hmm. and everything. And I don't believe you're allowed to have that in schools either. Is there anything about the book that you want to discuss that we haven't touched upon that shocked you? That you, you know, particularly enjoyed, maybe?
Well, one thing I would like to say was that I just couldn't believe how the Helmuth was sentenced, how his conditions were. Because, you know, as I think of a jail cell now, I think of it as a bed with a plastic mattress that, you know, you had a little bit of cover. But also the restroom facilities. He didn't have a restroom on, he had a pot. And then I know in some jails they only get below the sandwich, but that's better than a piece of bread, because I know I want some meat with my bread.
And remember, your favorite class is lunch, so we got that.
And, you know, I just thought it was, you know, I know it's kind of sad that he is going to be sentenced to death. You know, I could have at least thought they could have did it better for him, just, you know, like, okay, this, you already been sentenced, you know, this is, you know, we can put you in a better place until it's time for you to go. But, you know, that's what they didn't believe in, and the Gestapo didn't want. I think they just wanted their life to be miserable.
They did. They wanted his life to be as miserable as they could make it.
Well, they were making an example of him,
exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you think he stands out in history?
He really does, because as you told me before I read the book, that you said he was the youngest person to be executed in the Holocaust. And that was something. And then I also had to look at my age, and we're only like 2 years apart. And, you know, I could have been like, wow, I'm 15, and 2 years from now I know I'll be dead. So, you know, that was just something that big day on me.
How would you like to be thinking the fact that in day 264 you're going to die? How about weighing that on your head?
That would be really miserable. That really would, because you know, as you know, now you never know when you're gonna die. But then when you're knowing that you're gonna die, you know, it just on pins and needles.
Well, you know, now they give you a set day, they give you a set time and everything, and usually it's like dead of night when they execute them, so they do have a time, they do know when that's going to happen. He did not. That was part of the psychological torture that he went through. And also hearing that executioner come through every week, knowing that it was Tuesday, knowing that he could stop or not stop at his door, was also part of that torture. I don't think I could have survived that, but I don't also know that I could have been brave enough to have done what he did at 17 either. Mm-hmm. At 17, I wasn't even beginning to think along those type of serious lines.
Well, usually 17-year-olds are thinking they're invincible. They will live forever. Don't you think you're going to live forever?
Yes, ma'am.
Of course, we're thinking about our cars and when we're going to get that first car and where we're going to drive and everything. And he didn't have any of that to think about. He was thinking about his life, the life of his fellow countrymen. And that's something that we don't necessarily think about is, you know, our fellow countrymen. We think about our families, we think about our loved ones and our friends, but not that person, you know, two or three states over. And he was thinking about everyone in his country and standing up for it.
Well, this has been a very interesting conversation here today. We've had Mia Fuller, who is a 10th grader at Greenwood High. We've learned that there is some bullying going on over there. We are concerned about what kids wear and some of the things that are happening there. Tracy, I know that you've worked with a lot of students on this, and you probably have a lot more. You're going to be doing more book discussions and whatnot?
Yes, we are. I've got several planned down at the Niasix High School in the next few weeks.
So this is what's going on. This is what your kids have been reading, folks. So ask them questions about it. We are right here at the Greenwood County Library. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.